This is DW News, and these are our top stories. Germany's candidates vying to succeed Angela Merkel faced off for the last time ahead of Sunday's election in a TV debate clashing on tax, debt and foreign policy. A post-debate poll showed Social Democrat candidate Olaf Scholz clinging to his lead, with the CDU candidate Armin Laschet and Green candidate Annalena Baerbock both making slight gains. The World Health Organization has called on international donors to resume funding of Afghanistan's healthcare program amid fears of a humanitarian crisis. They say the already fragile healthcare system is overwhelmed, with hundreds of thousands of vulnerable Afghans deprived of access to care. International funding has been suspended since the Taliban seized control. The EU has unveiled plans that would require manufacturers to adopt a standard charging method for mobile phones, tablets, headphones and other portable devices. Brussels believes the move would cut back on electronic waste. Apple, which makes one of the charging systems in use, is expected to fight this plan. This is DW News. You'll find more information on our website at dw.com.
It has been more than a month since the Taliban took control of Afghanistan. After 20 years on the outside, the Taliban are back inside, and they are quickly discovering this is not the Afghanistan they used to rule. In Kabul, women are protesting, demanding their rights. Billions of dollars in foreign aid are frozen. The economy is on the verge of collapsing, and Mother Nature is not helping either. A severe drought has led to a harvest of hunger. Tonight, this is the Taliban in Afghanistan, a government of the starving. I'm Brent Goff in Berlin. This is The Day.
Qualification in my, like in this new government is being part of jihad, being part of killing of people.
The Islamic government has come, which is a good thing.
And the fact that the women are so disliked by these men is beyond belief.
I want economic stability from the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan.
But there is no work, no employment. Money has disappeared. People are totally jobless.
If they really want to govern and lead in Afghanistan, they are not able to govern without 50% of Afghanistan, which are women.
Also coming up, Germans go to the polls on Sunday. More than half of the country's 60 million voters are over the age of 50. Many young voters say they feel invisible, not seen, not heard, in a democracy that they say is more like a gerontocracy.
Unsere Generation hat keine Lobby.
There's no one lobbying for our generation. That's the problem. The interests of older people are institutionally better represented than those of young people.
To our viewers on PBS in the United States and to all of you around the world, welcome. We begin the day with doctors without medicine, businesses with no revenue, and a people with countless mouths to feed. Now, that one sentence describes much of Afghanistan, a picture of a humanitarian disaster that has gone from bad to worse in the month since Kabul fell to the Taliban. Clinics are struggling to stay open, unable to buy medicines because foreign aid remains frozen. Hundreds of thousands have fled their homes, fearful of what a Taliban future will bring. And now, most acute, half of the country's population, some 20 million people, are facing malnutrition, even starvation, if life-saving aid is not delivered soon. Tonight, the struggles and suffering on the ground. DW's correspondent Nick Connolly is in Afghanistan. His report takes us to a refugee camp in the northern Afghan city of Mazar-e Sharif.
A year ago, these people all still had homes. Months of intense fighting as the Taliban advanced, coupled with an unprecedented drought, finally pushed them off their land after decades of hard scrabble. 500 families now live here on the edge of Mazar-e Sharif, sharing one water pump and little else. Toivat doesn't have pictures of her sons alive to show us. They were lost in the fighting that claimed both her husband and her sons' lives this summer, after their village was caught between Taliban and government troops. All she has left now is her son's phone and pictures from their funeral.
I've got nowhere else to go. All the responsibility for my daughters is now on my shoulders. Everything is so expensive. Me and some of the other women here go begging in the city. We collect scraps of bread to bring back to the camp for everyone to eat.
Before the Taliban takeover, international aid agencies provided some basic supplies. Since they pulled out, these people have been on their own, and the Taliban aren't able to fill that gap. A man wants us to see his neighbourhood in this tent city. He's been in a wheelchair since the fighting of the 1990s. The last few years, he says, have been by far the hardest for him and his neighbours. This woman has seven children, and her youngest are struggling with malnutrition.
First there was the fighting, then pests destroyed our crops. When the rains failed, there was just nothing left to eat. That's why we came here.
Even if the fighting is now largely over, these people, like hundreds of thousands of other Afghans, have nothing to go back to. As winter draws closer, they're waiting and hoping for the international community to find some way of engaging with the Taliban and to bring in urgently needed supplies.
Our correspondent Nick Connolly, he is in Kabul tonight. Good evening to you, Nick. You traveled all the way from the north of the country into the heart of Afghanistan. Talk to me about the people and the conditions that they are living in.
There's obviously a huge discrepancy between the cities and the villages, people who've fled their homes and those who've been able to stay put. Kabul, for instance, is a city that is a shadow of what it was. Taxi drivers complain about a lack of traffic, a city that's too quiet, unusually quiet. People are obviously out, but there are a lot of people who are obviously sitting still, sleeping quietly at home, trying to avoid being seen, being found, waiting for a chance to get out. Business is happening, people are going to school, women are out without male relatives, unlike the case and unlike the situation back in the 90s when the Taliban were in power. But burqas are seen more frequently, women are not being allowed to work in more important government jobs, and there is the huge economic issue. The currency is tanked, people can't afford basic foodstuffs, and in lots of cities you see people out on the roads every morning looking for a day's work because they can't feed their families.
And you know, Nick, although Kabul fell to the Taliban just over a month ago, we tend to talk already about the country pre-Taliban and now under Taliban rule. I'm wondering how much of this economic, humanitarian crisis, how much of it existed before U.S. and NATO troops withdrew, and how much has arisen since the Taliban arrived?
I think the underlying weakness was here. By some estimates, the previous government was dependent on international aid for up to 70% of its revenues. Those have now fallen away, been frozen. International accounts belonging to that government have been frozen and are not available for the Taliban. And so suddenly those weaknesses are all being exposed rather brutally, added to by that drought you mentioned already that's really having an impact on people living hand-to-mouth in those far-flung villages. And with all the uncertainty, the currency has really fallen against the dollar. And this is a country that imports most of its basic foodstuffs. So a real perfect storm, lots of different factors coming together, and a Taliban government that has experience of fighting but not of governing.
And we know that the Taliban are not pleased with the former government's representative who has a time slot to speak at the UN General Assembly. The Taliban, they want to be heard at the UN. They want legitimacy, yet they remain unrecognized internationally as the government of Afghanistan. What about inside the government? There are rumors of rifts within the Taliban leadership.
Look, I think for 20 years, these people had a common enemy, and that was the Western-backed government here in Kabul. That brought lots of different people together of varying degrees of orthodoxy, as it were. And now that that enemy has fallen, has fled, all those divisions, those rifts are now being exposed in an extraordinarily short amount of time. I think few of the Taliban leaders really believed in their heart of hearts that they would get power as quickly and as easily as they did. But having said that, people here also talk about the bigger discrepancy between the top brass, who maybe have lived abroad in Pakistan, in Doha, have engaged with Western diplomats, and the rank and file, who really often enough were in it for the ideology, for an Afghanistan living by Sharia law, and who now increasingly are saying, why are we engaging with the West? Why are these changes not happening fast enough? Why doesn't Afghanistan look like it did in the 90s, more than a month after this coming to power? So they're also going to have plenty of problems keeping their own rank and file happy, given that they don't have a lot of money to distribute, and given that they are in this bind having to get some kind of engagement with the West.
Yeah, and Afghanistan is definitely not the country it was in the 1990s, that is for sure. Nick Connolly for us in Kabul, Afghanistan tonight. Nick, thank you and stay safe. Well, with just 3 days to go until Germany's election, it's still anyone's guess who will succeed Angela Merkel as the next German chancellor. Poll numbers released today suggest the race between the two main parties has tightened even more in this final campaign phase. The center-left Social Democrats, led by Olaf Scholz, are holding steady with 25%. Angela Merkel's conservatives, led by Armin Laschet, appear to be closing the gap. But with the numbers changing day to day, it's not clear whether he can sustain that momentum. Now, many of the voters casting ballots will be under the age of 30. They hardly remember a time when Angela Merkel was not the chancellor. Young voters don't make up a large share of the electorate, but the issues most important to them, such as climate change, they've already shaped the campaigns of the major candidates. DW's Anya Koch has been talking to young people about the future of Germany.
For the second time in his life, Pierre Zissel gets to have a say in the federal election. And he's certain that he will vote. Every young voice is important, says Pierre, because they lack sufficient representation.
Unsere Generation hat keine Lobby. Das ist
There's no one lobbying for our generation. That's the problem. The interests of older people are institutionally better represented than those of young people.
Institutionell besser repräsentiert als die Interessen junger Menschen.
Less than 1% of MPs in the German Bundestag are under 30. Voters are mostly older and tend to vote for conservative parties. In Erfurt, where Pierre lives, every fifth resident is over 65. Pierre often has the feeling that politicians care too little about young people's concerns. The student noticed this during the pandemic, when many students felt afraid that their futures were being undermined.
Like a lot of students, I lost my part-time job in the hospitality sector. I know a lot of people who had to make cuts in their education because they lost their part-time jobs. Many have even interrupted or dropped out of their studies. And very little is said about that.
Pierre would like to see politics embrace the future, especially when it comes to climate change. He's been involved with the Fridays for Future movement for 2 years. The climate activists meet every week and are preparing a strike that will take place before the general election.
The federal election will definitely set a precedent. The next government will decide whether Germany can adhere to the Paris Agreement climate goals and whether we can do our part to help limit a temperature increase to 1.5 degrees.
He says to get politics moving, you need Fridays for Future and their demonstrations. Political parties don't understand their concerns.
I would almost say we're panicking. We've seen flood disasters all over the world, and not just this year. We've seen drought, heat waves, forest fires, and countless animal species becoming extinct, one after the other. And no one seems to care. We're racing towards the abyss while laughing.
Pierre doesn't believe that a new government will turn things around. He expects to have to take to the streets even after the election is over.
Well, I'm joined here at the big table by our political correspondent.